Conversation with Rashmi on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. My guest in studio this morning is Andrea Monk and Malcolm Smith. Andrea Monk, a local mother of two and a breast cancer survivor, offers a bra-fitting experience for local women through her business, the Cedar Lily Bra Boutique. So thank you, Andrea, for joining me in studio this morning. It's a pleasure having you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here, Rashmi.
Before we get into what Cedar Lily Bra Boutique is all about, take me back to your diagnosis of how breast cancer even began and how you found out. When were you diagnosed? At what age?
That's a good question. So, as you mentioned, I have two girls. Mm-hmm. And when I was breastfeeding my second daughter, she was about 1.5, I felt a lump in my breast. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't painful, and it just didn't go away. So I actually owe a lot of, and I did go to my doctor and said, hey, I've got this lump. And unfortunately, she said, oh, that's just a blocked duct, and sent me on my way. Oh, no. So yeah, right? And like, didn't talk to me about my family history and all that. And fortunately, I asked my pediatrician, who's a family friend of ours, mm-hmm. At a party one day, I said to her, hey, can you feel my breast for me? Yeah. And she did. And she said, you have to get that mammogram tomorrow, because she knows my family history. So mm-hmm. I'm Jewish, and Jewish people, like Ashkenazi Jews, have a higher likelihood of having the BRCA gene mutation, the BRCA gene mutation. And that's what I had. Okay. And she knew that, like, my aunt had died of breast cancer, and that there's cancer in my family, all these things. Mm-hmm. So I was so fortunate that she told me to do that. And then I was diagnosed, and that was in 2014. Mm-hmm. And so how old would that make me? So yeah. 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So 35.
Did they know what stage the diagnosis was?
It was stage 3. Like, once I had the biopsy and everything, it was stage 3.
So how did you feel when you first received that news?
It was very upsetting. Yeah, it was mm-hmm. very upsetting, especially hearing it from the doctor who initially told me that it was nothing. So there was a bit of anger there, as well as just like, oh my God, I have two small kids. Like, fortunately, my husband went with me. We just sat by the river, kind of held each other mm-hmm. and cried, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh my goodness, what is this going to mean for us? How is this going to go? Mm-hmm. But I'll be honest with you, I never once feared that I was going to die. Mm-hmm. I always knew that I just would have to go through all the steps mm-hmm. and that I was going to be okay. I don't know why I thought that, but mm-hmm. I did. And I actually think that that really helped me get through it and be here today
but
and healthy.
Even when you were told you need to get a mammogram done, did you expect maybe this would be the case?
Like, yeah.
Because there's a history there too, right?
Right. It's so hard to think going mm-hmm. back. Mm-hmm. I think initially, like, there was a time after I had my first child mm-hmm. that they were doing tests for women out of Women's College Hospital in Toronto to test for this BRCA gene mutation. Mm-hmm. And at that time, my mom's like, oh, you should get tested. You just have to spit on a stick and they'll test you. Okay. And it's easy. And I was like, oh, there's no way I have any, like, there's no way I have cancer. Like, mm-hmm. I was really thinking absolutely not. But mm-hmm. I think by the time I found the lump and I knew it wasn't a blocked duct, mm-hmm. it kind of seemed like, well, really, what else could it be? I don't know. I can't really recall, to be yeah. honest, but I wasn't entirely surprised.
And did you have the kind of support network normally have from family and friends?
I had an amazing support network, mm-hmm. I have to say. I have the best friends and family that a person could ask for going through something like this. Mm-hmm. They all pulled together. They made meals for us. They took the kids when we needed them. I stayed at my parents' house in Toronto after my chemo treatments. My husband was phenomenal in taking on the extra work mm-hmm, that needed, absolutely. You know, to looking after the kids. And I really felt amazingly supported, mm-hmm. yeah.
That's wonderful to have that, right?
Yes.
Because you don't want to be going through it all by yourself. You have nobody to talk to about. So did you share what you were experiencing with the people that were around you?
It was a bit of both. I think as a mom, like there was a lot of just management and logistics. But then there were times when I was like, oh my goodness, I need to cry about this. I need to talk to somebody. I remember going through, like when I was about to have my double mastectomy, I was just obviously very upset about that. And I have a wonderful neighbor. Her name is Vera, and she still lives next to me. And she came over and she was just with me and held me and acknowledged my feelings. And that was just really something that was so good for me. Mm-hmm. We also did a bit of a ceremony before I had my mastectomy, like with my girls and a friend of mine. They came over and they kind of did some body painting on me.
Okay.
And it was sort of like a bit of a way to sort of process it with the kids too. And we also wrote little notes about like sort of what we're going to miss about mommy and her body. And we put them in the river.
Okay.
Sort of a way of
releasing
it and just being like, okay, here's the next step. Here we go. And yeah, it was great.
So tell me about the treatment process itself. You went through chemo as well through this process.
I did. So initially when I was diagnosed, the first thing that the surgeon said is, we're going to do chemo. We want to kill off everything that could be in your body. Mm-hmm. So we went through that first. And I think I had 6 treatments or something. And it was okay. You know what's interesting is that I actually was starting my business at the same time. I had my laptop with me, Princess Margaret Hospital, waiting for chemo, sitting, getting chemo, and I was like working on my website. So like,
wow,
starting my business really helped me, I think, get through. Like, you know, chemo's not
keeps
fun.
You distracted.
It kept me distracted. It kept me focused on something else. And yeah, I went through it and it was unpleasant and I lost my hair and my eyebrows and my eyelashes and different things were like unpleasant for sure.
But how do you deal with something like that? Like, were you conscious about it? Because I know I have a friend who struggled with that loss of hair in identity of who she was.
I don't know why or how. Maybe it was because I have kids, 2 and 4 year old kids.
Very
at the
young.
Time. We tried to keep it light, honestly. Like I didn't want to lose my hair. I actually shaved, I kind of gave myself a few different hairstyles before it actually fell out. So I like shaved the sides and had like a long mohawk for a bit. And then we all did the clipping together.
Okay.
So that it was sort of like, I'm in charge here, or we're in charge. I'm not just going to let it fall out. I'm going to do it myself. So there was that. And then, I don't know, I remember a time sitting in the kitchen and the girls were like doing face paint all over my bald head. Like we just didn't let, I'd tried not to let it take over in a negative way and
embrace whatever was coming through in a different form.
Yes, exactly. And I think like losing the hair, that was one thing. I think when I lost my breasts, that was obviously a
huge,
bigger deal because that's permanent, right?
And you were nursing at
and
that
I was
time.
Nursing. Oh my gosh. That was brutal. If I think back, that was probably the hardest thing of the whole entire experience was like weaning cold turkey because we were going to gradually wean once I got my diagnosis because I knew I was going to start chemo and obviously you can't breastfeed through that. But one day I went in for like a bone density test or something and they gave me an injection and they said, oh, by the way, you can't breastfeed for 48 hours. And I was like, you could have warned me about this. And because that's a big part of my life, like my toddler depends on it. So rather than going through that 48 hours, starting again and then weaning, we actually decided to just stop at that point. And it was really hard. My daughter was crying. I was crying. Like I was like, I'm sorry. I wish we could nurse, but we can't. And it was really hard.
Through this journey, were there any programs or services offered to you where you could find help with how the treatment process goes? Like you said just now, you didn't know this injection that they were giving. You needed to stop breastfeeding, right? So was there any kind of support system and information that you had or you could reach out to?
Right. There was lots of support. I didn't necessarily use it all. They give you lots of information. They're giving pamphlets and all this. There's giving social worker numbers, all these different things. Mm-hmm. I didn't always think, okay, I need to reach out. Or they, and they also have like these things you can go to called, Look Good, Feel Better. Okay. And those are things that you can access that women going through cancer treatment can access all over Canada. It's actually a great program. So you can connect with people in your local community and they kind of teach you how to like draw on your eyebrows and like put on makeup to make yourself feel good. Mm-hmm. And they talk about other things as well.
Okay. Yeah. And
I didn't go, but.
But this was given to you by your doctor.
Yeah, at any time, like the people there at Princess Margaret Hospital in Toronto, which is one of the top cancer centers in North America, they were amazing. Like, honestly, I felt very well taken care of. So I met with lots of different people, genetic counselor, doctor, nurse, you know, everyone. And they were always saying, like, do you have any questions? And how are you doing? And like, it was really amazing support.
And did you face any obstacles during your treatment? And if so, how did you overcome it?
That's a good question. I feel like it went really quite smoothly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to think back.
Yeah.
Any obstacles?
Obstacles in terms of, you know, if one was where you couldn't nurse your child, right, but at the same time you were launching or working on your business. So going through this treatment process, did you have to stop that sometime in between or you were still on it?
No, I was like in full swing. I was at that point. So I do, I was starting this, the nursing bra conversion kits. That's something I came up with when I started breastfeeding. And actually, while I was doing radiation, I did my first ever trade show. So there I was with like very bald head and very exhausted going through radiation and doing that. Yeah, I can't really think of anything like an obstacle. I mean, you know, I almost feel like looking back, my husband probably could have used a lot more support, really. You know, like I was getting everything I needed. People are looking after me. How are you doing? What can we do to help? All this. And then looking back, I feel like, and talking to my husband, he was going through a whole grieving process.
Yes.
Losing, you know, the femininity of his wife. Like that's huge. Or not the femininity. I still feel feminine, but you know, it's a big thing. And not just that, but just all the extra childcare and support that he had to provide when I was not available, I think was a big hurdle that we're facing now. And another thing is that we're facing now is my children have a lot of anxiety. And although we were going through everything together, I think there's some deep rooted fears that that maybe we weren't talking about or they didn't even realize they had at the time. Fears of death, you know, mommy's not okay. And what's going to happen kind of thing. Like, even though we never really talked about that. So,
but has this journey kind of bonded the family even tighter and closer?
I think so. I think so.
When and where did simple nursing bras begin? That journey was something that started when you were nursing your child.
Yes.
So tell me about that journey.
Yeah. So when I was quite well endowed before even having kids. And then when I had my first daughter, I was so big, like K. I know nobody knows what K cup means, but it's very big. And I'm a 32 band, so small in the band. And I could not find any nursing bras that fit me. And I felt like just my body was so different. And I just felt like I was not supported. My back was sore. Everything was different. And my mom, who sews, suggested, well, why don't you try turning a bra into a nursing bra? And so we did. And so fortunately, we were able to find a bra that fit. And then we converted it using these magnetic clasps. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, oh my goodness, I look good. I feel good. Like I have the support I need. And these clasps were really easy to use. So it just like my confidence went way up. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, if I need this, I'm sure I'm not the only one. And So I started doing it for other women. And that's how it started. Like I started doing it out of my home, offering nursing bra conversions. And then I was like, well, how can I make this accessible to more people? Mm-hmm. And that's when I started creating this kit that allows people and then to turn their own bra into a nursing bra.
Okay.
And And while I was going through surgery, in the winter of my diagnosis, I was reaching out to bra boutiques across the country. And I think 25 people, boutiques started carrying my clasps in their stores so that when women would come in, they could say, oh, we can fit you in any bra in our store, and then we'll convert it.
Is it something that women can do it themselves? Like, what is the kit comprised of?
Yeah, initially, that was my hope, right? So yes. I was going to these trade shows and saying, oh, there's this kit. So the kit has two magnetic clasps, so mm-hmm. one for each strap, and then elastic that helps to attach the shoulder strap to the base of the bra mm-hmm. so that when you unlatch the clasp, the strap doesn't fall off your back, if that makes sense, if you guys mm-hmm. can picture it on mm-hmm. the radio. And then sewing instructions. And it's not difficult sewing, but the problem these days is that women don't sew. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest issue. So when I would show people at these trade shows, they'd be like, oh my God, that's amazing. How can I do that? And I said, well, you have to sew. And they say, oh, well, forget it. So the bra boutiques, fortunately, a lot of them have a seamstress that can mm-hmm. do it on the spot. So that's been an option there then. And now recently, too, I've been reaching out to seamstresses across the country. Mm-hmm. And now there's over 20 of us who are doing these nursing bra conversions for women all across, and as I said, all across the country. So if people are interested in finding that out, if there's somebody in their community, they should visit my website, mm-hmm. which is cedarlily.ca, and go to the link that says, it's like where to find or something like mm-hmm. that. I can't recall mm-hmm. exactly.
So, and they can just apply there and contact you?
Well, actually what I'm saying more is if a woman is breastfeeding, mm-hmm. she can go onto the website to see if there's a seamstress in her community who's already offering the service. And that's another thing too we were mentioning is if somebody out there sews and wants to offer the service, mm-hmm. they should definitely apply through my website mm-hmm. and just reach out by email and see if they can do that.
Yeah. So how did the shift from company you had just begun with your mom's support and help to having the whole company start off the Cedar Lily Bra Boutique?
Yeah. Well, that's
how did that journey happen?
Yeah. So basically, I was offering these nursing bra conversions, but a lot of the times women were saying, well, I don't have a good bra, or I don't know where to get a bra in the first place. Mm-hmm. So that's how it started. I was like, well, I have experience because I was this odd size. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying odd, but a lot of breastfeeding women, their breasts get bigger. So they're like maybe smaller in the band, larger in the cup, or mm-hmm. or not. Mm-hmm. I think actually in North America, finding a good bra is a very difficult thing.
Yes.
Unless you go to a specialty store mm-hmm. where they have the full range of sizes.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of how it evolved. It was like, well, I want to provide the whole service. I don't want to just do the conversions. Mm-hmm. So I started slowly growing my business that way. And it grew. I was doing it out of my home. Then I connected with Yolanda at Yolanda's Fashion Boutique, mm-hmm. who opened her shop 2 years ago. And she invited me to rent space from her and be inside her store. And that was a really wonderful place for me to land because, you know, people are going and looking for clothes. And then they also need a good bra.
Mm-hmm. And you also do bra fitting, right? For people? For women who need it.
Absolutely. That's a big part of it. Mm-hmm. I have all the bras there. They come in and see me. They can book an appointment or they can just walk in. and it's private, and we have a conversation. It's not me telling them what they need. It's them telling them what they're looking for, what they need. Mm-hmm. And a big niche for me is actually wire-free bras. Okay. A lot of women are just like tired of underwire.
Yes.
And, you know, part of the reason for that could be that they were just never fitted properly. Mm-hmm. So it's not comfortable. Mm-hmm. But the other part is maybe they just don't want it, and that's fine. So I love fitting women in even bigger sizes with no underwire and seeing the look on their face when they're like, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. This feels really good.
And you also give tips to women who are looking for a nursing bra. What two or three tips would you suggest?
Okay, so what I would say is going wire-free, definitely, for the first 4 to 6 weeks is important, because you want to make sure that your milk ducts are not constricted by an underwire, especially if your bra doesn't fit. So mm-hmm. no underwire, for sure, for the first 4 to 6 weeks is good. Another thing is, you know, make sure the bra fits in the band around your body. Like the band is the rib cage, the mm-hmm. number, the 34, 36. Mm-hmm. And if that fits, that's where the support comes from. So you want that part to feel a bit snug so that you're not carrying all the weight on your shoulders. And yeah, just...
And this one part I had read on your website was, you say there's no need for maternity bras. Why so?
Yeah, so I think a maternity bra to me just means a bra that you wear while you're pregnant. So it doesn't, there's nothing special or fancy about a maternity bra except for the fact that there's no underwire. So because you want to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. I think that you could go, you know, like if you could go to a bra fitter, which is great, but you can also go, I know they have good bras at like Winners and Joe Fresh. Bras without underwire that are fine. You don't have to go spend a lot of money on a quote unquote maternity bra, because honestly, that's all it is. It's a comfortable bra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So where can people find you, Andrea, if they're looking to reach out to you, get some tips, get help? Where can they reach out?
Yeah. So they can look on my Facebook page. I'm quite active there. So it's Cedar Lily Bra Boutique on Facebook. Also, I have a website, which is cedarlily.ca. They can email me and or call as well. I can give that. All that information is on my Facebook page and my website. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually starting to do pop-up shops. So for people specifically in KW, I'm going to actually be doing fittings at Play a Latte Cafe in Kitchener on October 21st from 10 until 5. If you want to book a fitting, please send me an email at andrea@cedarlily.ca. And I'm also going to be in Waterloo in November. I can't recall the exact date, but you can also email me if you want. It's at the end of November, possibly the 26th. Mm-hmm. Email me if you want to book for that, because I want to be accessible. I know, and I'm in Guelph, which is, I'm at north of Woodlawn on Highway 6, inside Yolanda's Fashion Boutique, and people are welcome to come and see me there too.
Thank you so much for sharing all these wonderful tips and giving our listeners a chance to understand what nursing bras are and what your company does and how it helps these women. Because we all struggle, especially with back issues. I find that a big challenge to find the right kind of fitting and the straps that support your back. None of us pay attention to. And over time, that can take a big hit on your posture and everything else. So thank you for everything that you do.
You're welcome. I absolutely love it. I mm-hmm. really enjoy helping women. So mm-hmm. it's a pleasure.
And one last question before we wind up. You meet so many people in the community. So how has community supported you?
That's a great question. Honestly, I was on a Facebook group, a KW Facebook group, in fact. Mm-hmm. And that's really where a lot of my business started. And I just felt so lucky that some people initially took a chance on me. I was doing home visits. People were letting me go into their home, do mm-hmm. a bra fitting, convert bras. And I just feel like I owe a big thank you to the women of KW specifically, not to mention everywhere, but that's kind of how it began. And people have been so supportive on Facebook, liking, engaging with my posts. I honestly feel very, very lucky. And I just want to say a huge thank you to all my customers and all the people in the community that I haven't even met that tell people about what I do. So thank you so much to everyone. I honestly, I couldn't be here doing what I'm doing without you.
Thank you, Andrea. It's an absolute pleasure having you and you sharing with our listeners what you've been doing. So thank you for coming in this morning and stay tuned. I'll be right back with Malcolm Smith, my next guest in studio. Hello, and those of you who have just tuned in, you are listening to In Conversation with Rashmi on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. Second guest here is Malcolm Smith, and he was born and raised in Kitchener, and he is a letter carrier delivering mail for Canada Post in Waterloo. At 15, in grade 9, Malcolm was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. He has been living with this very manageable disease for the last 12 and a half years, and he believes it's taught him a lot in life. He even ran the Harvest Half Marathon this month, which was his first time running more than 10 kilometers. So thank you, Malcolm, for joining me in studio this morning. It's great having you here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So before we get into what you actually do, I want to go back to when you were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and at what age?
So I was diagnosed when I was 15 years old. I was actually onset with the type 1 diabetes right through my exams during first semester of grade 9. So I actually remember doing my English exam. And during the one exam, I had to go to the bathroom three times. And I'm pretty sure my English teacher thought I might have been cheating or something. But it was actually the diabetes. And before you start taking your medication, your body tries to flush out all of the sugar that it can. So so you do go to the bathroom a lot and you drink a lot of water.
And at that point, did you know you had diabetes?
No, not at that point. Yeah, okay. So I'm pretty sure it was within the next day or two that my mom took me to the doctor. They took a blood test. And
so what brought you to go to the doctor?
For the most part, it's three things.
Okay.
It's drinking an absurd amount of water, going to the bathroom a lot, and your energy levels are really low.
Okay.
So when I got diagnosed, my blood glucose was 46.
Oh, wow.
And it's supposed to be between 4 and 7. So I was actually at the point that I was starting to get blurry vision and just something was up. Yeah, super low energy levels. So went to the doctor and basically the week in between first and second semester of grade 9, I spent most of that week in the hospital. Adjusting to my new regimen of living and trying to be as healthy as possible, right?
Was there a particular diet that was prescribed to you and certain things that you were restricted to?
Not necessarily. For the most part, I ate whatever I kind of wanted to, but I stayed strict to the guidelines that they prescribed for me. So my guidelines personally, every diabetic is different, was for every 15 grams of carbohydrates, I would take one unit of Nova Rapid insulin.
Okay.
So if it was somebody's birthday and I wanted to have some cake, I'd try my best to figure out the math behind how many carbohydrates were in my certain piece of cake. And then I would go to my insulin, figure it out, and then take my insulin. And so For the most part, I live a pretty normal life. I know the Canadian Diabetes Association and the JDRF like to say that we're people first. So we still like to do everything that normal people like to do, right? Like we're not robots.
Absolutely. But at that age, were you faced with challenges once the diagnosis happened? Because from what I understand, when you're diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at a very early age, the chances of going into a coma or having a drastic medical condition can be so quick that it can affect your whole life.
It's true. Yeah, the diabetic comas come from low blood sugars. And I'm actually thankful that I got through most of my childhood and actually most of puberty before I ended up getting the onset. because I know a lot of people, a lot of parents who have type 1 diabetics who are like six or at that age, it's a lot harder to at least be confident that your child can be in control of what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. So at least when I was 15, I had the mind to be like, okay, so like, I know I need to do this. I know this needs to happen if I feel like this. I know I need to check my blood sugar. Mm-hmm. But a lot of younger people, I can imagine their parents are much more concerned just because they're at a birthday party or all of a sudden they want to go play for 2 hours and they get onset with a big low blood sugar. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot scarier as a younger person. So sure. I'd say getting used to the low blood sugars was and just learning to feel what they actually felt like. Mm-hmm. And then going, okay, I need to check my sugar right now. I need to have sugar on hand so that I could administer it. Mm-hmm. Just also because I'm an extremely active person. So like I love to play. So like mm-hmm. figuring out the way to maintain a good blood sugar while still being able to play team sports, like mm-hmm. Just with my friends, go biking, running, whatever, you know, that was the biggest obstacle, I'd say.
Yeah. And for your family too, when you were diagnosed, how did they handle it?
I think they handled it pretty well. Yeah. My mom definitely got more scientific and regimented about what I was eating and kind of when I was eating. Mm-hmm. And always making sure that I had sugar on me. And you know what? I don't know that much. I think they took it pretty well. Obviously it's a cause for concern, mm-hmm. but it's one of those weird things where when they'd ask me like, oh, hey, how have your sugars been? It's kind of one of those answers where I go, they are how they always are. Like, I mean, like they go up, they go down, and mm-hmm. I do my best to keep on top of it. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, they definitely cared for me and, added it into their little, questions like, oh, how was school? How was your sugars? You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had decided to get into health and fitness and got a diploma,
mm-hmm.
but you couldn't pursue your career in that. So was diabetes a reason?
It definitely was because it changed part of what I wanted to pursue. And at that point in time, I definitely had a little bit of anxiety about where was my next health benefits going to be coming from? Because mm-hmm. while I was in school, students have health benefits, right? Mm-hmm. And then as school is getting closer and closer to the end, I'm like, well, because my diabetes would roughly cost me about $5,000 a year if I didn't have health benefits. Mm-hmm. Luckily, Canada Post has they have a good plan, mm-hmm. so I'm super thankful for that, mm-hmm. Which was a huge draw for me. Especially because I had a couple friends in the health and fitness field who were personal trainers and this and that, and no health benefits and extremely competitive. So I decided to follow the Canada Post train.
So how did that happen? Because you ended up with a full-time job. You worked mm-hmm. as a contract employee, right?
Yes.
With Canada Post.
The casual.
Yeah. And then you were hired by them.
Mm-hmm.
So how has that journey been working with Canada Post? And you walk a lot in the neighborhood. You're mm-hmm. dropping letters.
Yep.
So how's that experience been?
So I actually just started my ninth year at Canada Post. Wait a second. Let me fact check myself. Maybe eight. No, I just started my ninth year.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So I worked in the plant for 4 years as a permanent part-time. Mm-hmm. So the hours were relatively flexible, and the amount of physical exertion was definitely not as much as it is now. And so after that, I decided I wanted to get full-time, and it took a couple months, and I got transferred into Waterloo to be a full-time letter carrier. And so so nowadays, every day I go out to deliver mail. I always have about 2 mango juices on me. Each of them has about 30 carbohydrates or 30 grams of sugar, mm-hmm. and 2 protein bars.
Okay.
So just as I'm going throughout the day, because every day is different for each diabetic, right?
Like sure.
It depends if you played sports last night. It depends if you ate way too much last night. Like
mm-hmm.
the every day is different. So I always make sure that when I'm going out to deliver, I have my my sugar in my holsters.
And you also, you need to check your blood, right? Like how many times poke yourself to check what your levels are at?
I usually do it before I go out and deliver, and then when I get back. So while I'm out there, I actually have a pretty good mind for if my blood sugar is going low.
Sure.
And the doctor always tells you, much rather be high than low. So if I feel that something's a little bit up, I will just drink a mango juice and I'll be like, hey, like if it goes a little high, I can deal with that when I get back. But I'd much rather that than deal with a low while I'm out on the street.
So doing what you do in the neighborhood in Waterloo, you walk a lot, you climb stairs.
Yes.
The physical activity is quite a bit, right? And how does that work in the winter time? Because seasons change.
Yes.
And how your function changes. So how do you cope with that?
Winter is definitely a struggle.
Do you still walk as much?
Yep. Our routes don't change during the winter. So every point of call or house or apartment business that we deliver to during the summer, we do the exact same thing during the winter. So it definitely is much more physically exhausting because it's basically like you're walking through sand all day, right? Because a lot of people have snow everywhere. There's ice, which last February was crazy. Our entire city was covered in ice.
And that's right.
So like I like to do this thing called the penguin walk on ice where you like take really short, small steps and you like you waddle a little bit just to make sure that
you don't slip and fall.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So it's much more of a challenge in the winter. And I've actually struggled with a couple things with diabetes through the winter too. Because one of my main sources of sugar is my mango juice. And if it's minus 40 degrees out, that juice might turn into a solid.
Oh, yes.
Right? So all of a sudden, my lifeline there turns into a solid. I can't really drink it. So I'll have to like hold it in my hands just to like get a little bit more juice going or something along those lines. So I've actually resorted to putting my mango juice in my back pocket so that it's on my body so that it can keep warm.
The heat.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So the same struggle with my blood sugar meter. They run off batteries. Okay. So if the batteries get cold, my blood sugar meter won't want to work. And then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I gotta put it in my underneath my coat against my skin just to warm up the batteries to check my sugar.
So when you're walking around in the neighborhood, do you feel a sense of community? Yes. People stop and talk to you? Like how has that experience been for you?
It's been all over the map. Yeah, so I've delivered to Uptown Waterloo. I've delivered to a bunch of normal neighborhoods throughout the city. And right now I'm delivering in Beechwood. There's people are really good about their dogs. It's a nice quiet neighborhood, which I really enjoy because it means I get to listen to audiobooks.
Okay.
Yeah, which is it makes such a sweet difference when you're out there.
So what's been your experience with dogs?
So every letter carrier's got a couple stories. So I've been bitten once and it drew blood. And then I've had at least a handful of standoffs in which I actually had to like back up. And if I wasn't at the ready, they probably would have went for me. So the one time I got bit, I was actually extremely lucky because I had walked up three stairs and the owner of the house, the owner of the dog, ended up opening their front storm door, like the screen door, with two bags of garbage in their hand. The dog, for some reason, knew I was coming. He like slipped by and like took a started to go for it, nipped me on the knee. And as I jumped back, and I'm extremely lucky that I didn't fall down the three stairs that I had just climbed up to.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, whew, you know what? It was bad, but it could have been worse, right?
So you got to stay alert all the time. Exactly. When you walk through the neighborhood delivering mail.
Yeah.
And we sitting in our homes, we don't think of that.
It's one of those things that nobody really knows what it is, but I think the best guess that I've ever heard was that we walk across and through so many different addresses, and each address has its own smell. So we're technically carrying hundreds and hundreds of smells on us. So when a dog smells like, what is that? Like, I it's not familiar to me. It smells like a whole bunch of things that I don't know what is. So so I that's the best one that I've heard, that, wow, that they get triggered and they're like, hey, like, what's going on right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a fascinating story. Wow. Mm-hmm. What message would you give youngsters or people who have been diagnosed with diabetes? Like, what's your message to them?
The best message I could say is do whatever you love doing, and your diabetes management will fall into place as long as you're adamant about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, I love to play soccer. I love to go biking. Like, I ran that half marathon.
Yes. I would love to find out about that, too.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah. So, I kind of thought, well, I follow a couple people on Instagram that are, mm-hmm, like, ultra marathoners and, mm-hmm, stuff. And that's a little extreme for me. Yeah. It definitely inspired me. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not getting any younger. So, mm-hmm, I mean, if I'm going to run a half marathon, right now is probably the best time. So, so I made sure to prepare for my diabetes. Mm-hmm. And it took me an hour and 50 minutes to run it, which came in 83rd overall, 10th in my age category.
I'm fabulous. Like, hey,
pretty good, pretty good. And so throughout the 21 kilometers, I had to ingest almost about 100 grams of carbohydrates, mm-hmm, just to maintain a normal blood sugar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and you completed the run.
Yep.
That's wonderful.
Yep.
All the people who are going through whatever they're going through with type 1 diabetes, do not give up. We have an, mm-hmm, example right here,
yep,
who's doing fabulous in, mm-hmm, you know, setting your goals and saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This disease is not going to take over my life.
Yep.
And for people in the community, as a letter carrier, as a community, how can we support what you do? We appreciate everything that the mail carriers do. What is it, one message you would like to give?
If I'm speaking for all letter carriers, mm-hmm, there's two things. Just be mindful of your dogs, because we're not the people who feed them, mm-hmm, and your dogs are lovely to you, but that doesn't mean they're going to be lovely to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
As well, make sure that through the winter that you can shovel steps, just because we don't like getting hurt. We like delivering your mail, but if something looks a little too dangerous, we're most likely not going to be delivering, just based on the hazard of it.
It was wonderful having you here, Malcolm, and thanks for sharing your amazing journey with us this morning.
Thank you, Rashmi.
I'm sure you've inspired a lot of people listening and also got us to understand the challenges you guys face doing what you do and making our lives easy, right? So thank you for that, mm-hmm, and wishing you the very best.
Yeah, likewise, Rashmi. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Tune in to CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo, or you can also listen online on www.radiowaterlooca at 9 a.m. If you have a story or you want to share it, you can email me. It's onairwithrashmi@gmail.com. It's onairwithrashmi@gmail.com. You can also follow my Facebook page in Conversation with Rashmi, or my Instagram feed at Rash Sanj. It's RASHSANJ. Until then, enjoy the weekend. You are listening to In Conversation with Rashmi on CKMS.